Today we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Samech Bet Amud Bet, the last line, just to do a little chazara, since the Gemara continues from the question that we left off with yesterday, which is, Yibailu Shnei Shitim She'amru. When we say that if you leave two lines of space, that it's problematic, if you leave that gapping between the shtar itself and the signature of the Edim, Hein Va'aviran, are we speaking about that space, Va'aviran, and the space between them, meaning that enough to write the font that's there, plus the spacing between the two, Shurot, Odil Mahain Velo Aviran. Or maybe we're speaking about the two lines worth of font without any space between them. So Amar Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, Mistavra, Dehain Vaviran. It only makes logical sense that we're speaking about the lines plus the spacing between them. The Isakadatra Hain Velo Aviran, because if you say that it's just them, meaning the size of the font, and not the spacing between the two rows, then the way that we have our girsa is shita achad below avira the maichazio. If you have one line of size of the font without any spacing above and below it, then maichazio, what are you going to use it for? You can't write on it, because if you write on it and use the same size font that you used before, it's going to touch the line above it. If you use a smaller font, then it's going to look like you added in afterwards. It's going to be obvious that something else was written here in the end. So then you must have a line that has space above it, because that would then be usable, or you'd be able to write the same font that you had before. That's the girsa that we have in our Gemara. The Bach over here notes that he thinks that the girsa of the Rishbam was, and that was the question according to the Rishbam. What is it useful for? And the question is equally on one line and two lines, which is that if you have one line without any airspace, that just the size of the font, or you have two lines just the size of the font and no space between them, neither of those are usable in terms of forging the document. One line for sure, because first of all, we don't even look at the Shita Achrona, we don't look at the last line, we don't take any note of what's written in the last line. So there it doesn't matter whether you have space or don't have space, because whatever you write there is going to be irrelevant. But if you have two lines with no spacing, there too you're going to have any reason to worry about forgeries. Because the individual writing has got to get two lines worth of font in, plus spacing between them. Because then we will ignore the last line, and the line above it then will become significant. But that can only be true if you have enough space to write, with the spacing between them, the same spacing that's been in the whole shtar all the way down. Otherwise, it'll be obvious that there was a forgery or there was wording that was added at the end of the shtar between the end of the shtar and the signature of the Edim. So for the Rishbam, the question is simply without the gapping between the lines, without empty space between the lines, then you can't do anything with this. Because we have a given already that the last line is meaningless. And the only way it would be meaningful is if you wrote something above the last line. And that'd only be true if you have two lines, but you need two lines worth of font plus the empty space between them. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot and others suggest that the question, like the girsa that we have in our Gemara, is Shita achat below avira lemaichazio. You have one line without the empty space between it and the previous line. What can you do with that? And the assumption here in the Gemara is that the last line would be meaningful. Meaning that this is prior to the conclusion we reached in the previous Gemara. We already reached the conclusion that we ignore the last line of the shtar. This Gemara was asking the question before we knew that conclusion. So here, even the last line would be meaningful. And the Gemara is asking, if you have a last line that's meaningful, if you don't have the empty space, what are you going to write in there? If you write font that's a different size, it'll be obvious that it was a forgery. If you write font the same size, it's going to touch the line above it. And it'll also be obvious that there's a problem over here. So it must be that you have a line with the empty space above it. So El Alav Shma Mina, Hein Vaviran Shma Mina. So conclusion from this is obviously the spacing that we're speaking about here, that is left between the end of the shtar and the signature of the Edim. When we're speaking about one line or two lines, we're speaking about the lines that are the size of the font contained in the body of the shtar, plus the spacing between them. Rabbi Shabtai Amar Mishmei Dechizkia, Shnei Shitim Shamru Bichtav Yadei Edim. That the two lines that we say over here that make the shtar pasul, if you have a gapping between the end of the shtar and the Edim, those two lines are in the handwriting of the Edim, Velo katav yidei sofer, and not the handwriting or the font of the sofer. My time, dechod demizayif, someone who comes to forge a document, lav legabe safra azil, he doesn't go to a sofer to be mizayif, to forge the document. It's too risky to involve another party in such a forgery. And so he won't go to the sofer to write in those last two lines. He'll do it himself. So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is you have to have sufficient space there by which the person himself could write in the document. And when we see over here, Ketav Yedei Edim, it's Lav Dafka the Edim. There are those that take it literally, like the Ramban, who says literally the Edim that are signed on this document, that would have to be their handwriting. Probably or likely because you need to come up with something that wouldn't look like it's odd or a forgery. If it's the same as the Sofer's writing, fine. If it's the same as the Edim's writing, fine. Because then you can match it up and say that the Edim did this or it was a part of the document. If you have a third party's font or writing in there, then it would be obvious that maybe there was a forgery. Although most don't read like the Ramban and say that Yedei Edim is as opposed to the Sofer. That the Sofer is not going to be the one to write these last two lines, but rather someone else will write the last two lines, the person who's likely trying to forge or change the meaning of the document. And so therefore you have to have sufficient space there where he would write and not be as mi'uman, not as skilled as the Sofer. And that's what the Rashbam writes. A Sofer is extremely skilled by which he can write letters in a smaller font or he can write in a smaller space. An individual is going to forge the document. His writing skills aren't on par with the Sofer, and therefore he's going to need more space to write, or you would say it this way, even if he can write like the Sofer, he's not as confident as the Sofer, and therefore he wants to be sure that he has sufficient space to write in there, by which he won't bump into the letters above or the letters below, and he'll feel comfortable filling in the space. So as we're saying here, that there's a kula here, that the two lines have to be big enough that an individual, not a Sofer, would be able to write in the two lines that are left available there. V'kama, how much is that? How much spacing do you need in order to have a classification of two lines? And we said before, be'aviran, with the empty space that sits between them, and the fact that it's ketav yedei edim. What does that mean? Translate that for me into practical sense of how much space you're leaving. So, Amar Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar, kagon lech lecha. It's as if you have lech lecha, zeh al gabe zeh, one on top of the other. Alma kosavar, it seems from this that he holds, shnei shitin v'arba'a avirin. You need two lines and four empty spaces between them. So, in essence, you have certain letters that if you have a font size that moves across, certain letters in the Hebrew alphabet extend above the sirtut that would bracket the normal size of the font, or in essence, a margin between the lines, which is that you have letters like lamed, which the base of the lamed fits into the normal size of the font, but the top of the lamed sticks up above that. And then you have a chaf sofit, which again, the body of the chaf sits within the line. We have a chaf sofit that drops below the line. So you need enough space by which you can have those letters that go above and below the line can fit in. So now, if you have a lamed below a chaf sofit, then you're actually going to need double the space. Because the top of the lamed then will touch the bottom of the chaf unless you leave enough space that you can have a chaf sofit coming down and a lamed going up. So what we're describing here is that you will need four air spaces or empty spaces between the two lines. You'll need space above the line to incorporate a lamed that goes above the line. Below the bottom line, you will need a space to allow the chaf sofit to go below. In between the two lines, you'll need double spacing to allow both a chaf sofit to drop down and a lamed to go up. So that's how he gets to two lines plus four air spaces. And the way that you can see this is both in the Rashbam and the Balei Tosafot. He discusses it at first, but that the lech lecha zeh al gabe zeh, he's saying that literally it's one above the other. It's the chaf sofit is right above the lamed that is sticking up. At one point he suggests maybe you don't need that because there's automatically a space between them. So that space between them, then you would have to add on an additional space to incorporate the chaf sofit or the lamed, and that's why you need double. The Balei Tosafot say that it's just not true because above the line you're only leaving one space and below the line you're only leaving one space. So if you had that, if they were not directly lined up, then you'd also need one space between the lines. So it must be a case where the chaf sofit is directly lined up with the lamed. In that case, you'll need two spaces between the two lines. And that's how he comes up with the two lines plus the four empty spaces. And again, this has to do with the ability of this in person to write with the possibility that he might come into such a situation. It doesn't necessarily mean that he has lech lecha to write one above the other. He just has to feel confident enough that if that circumstance comes up, that he won't have a problem with dealing with that circumstance. So here again, if someone's going to forge, they want to know ahead of time that they have a secure amount of space in order to do it, so that if they write, it won't look like it's a forged document. Because he does risk, in forging the document and writing something there, that he can be posel the entire shtar that was above. So he wants to enhance the shtar, he doesn't want to ruin the whole shtar, so he wants to have enough space that he's confident that he can write in such a manner. Chia ba'ami, mishmei du'mulo amar, gugon lamed milamalo, v'kaf milamato. He says that you have a lamed going above, and a kaf going below. Alma kasavar, he seemingly holds, shnei shitim v'shlosha birim. That it's two lines with three empty spaces. Meaning that you have a space above the line, a space between the two lines, and then a space below the bottom line. Or in essence, he's making space for a lamed to reach above the line, and a chaf sofit to reach below the line. What happens in a scenario where you have a chaf and lamed line up? We have a chaf sofit dropping and a lamed going up. So over there, the Rishbam says, the ben shnei shitim, dailanu ba'vir echad, between the two lines, it's enough with one space. Shechola amin et yado. He can be careful. Larchik rosh alamid detachtona mikneged regal chaf elyona. In order to avoid having a lamid go right below a chaf sofit. So you can understand that in one of two ways. You can either understand it that he will write it in such a manner that a lamid will never line up with a chaf sofit above it. And so you'll never run into a problem where you have both a letter going above the line and a letter going below the line in the same space. Or, you're in a situation where it does happen, he'll make sure to angle the lamed in such a manner that it doesn't bump into the base of the chaf sofit. That's what you were describing, which is, sometimes you see in Sifrei Torah, a lamed that is slightly angled, or a chaf sofit maybe is slightly angled, in order to avoid having them touch. But today they have tikkunim that the sofrim write from that write in a way or space it in a way that it avoids these types of problems. Meaning that if you follow that font size or you follow that writing, you won't run into these problems. They're written in a way that avoids having a lamed and a chaf sofit meet each other, so you don't run into these issues. So similarly over here, he says you can be mechavein that they don't line up, or even if they do line up, you can adjust to deal with the fact that they are lining up. And therefore you don't need this double spacing between the lines. It's enough to have a single space between the lines, and you'll deal with the letters above and below as long as they don't line up together. And now we have the third position, which is Rabbi Omar, Kagon Baruch Ben Levi B'Shita Achat. So that is if he wrote Baruch Ben Levi on one line, Kasavar Shita Achat B'Shnei Avirin. The amount of space you need to leave is one line with two spaces. Because he says that it's as if you wrote Baruch Ben Levi on one line. Now, Baruch ben Levi has a chaf sofit that drops below, has a lamed that goes above, but it's only one line. Since it's only one line, you just have to leave one space above, a single space above, and a single space below, and that would be sufficient to write that one line. And again here, you'd have to ask the question, what is the meaning of this statement of Rabbi Abo? Is this, like the Baal Tosafot suggested before we knew that we don't deal with the Shita Achrona? And therefore, this is just Shita Achat. Or is this saying that when you have a Shita Achat with Baruch Ben Levi that has an airspace above, an airspace below, has a empty space above and below, that is sufficient to write two lines in? And so he's saying is that, yes, you don't need that much space. If you have a space where you're leaving enough to write a line, but that includes generous space above and below to deal with the Lamed and the Chaf Sofit, within there you could write two lines. And that's what he's saying over here. So that's the two possibilities about the statement of Rabbi Abo. But again, here you have three different opinions as to what is the spacing that we are leaving. So all of them are addressing the problem of leaving two lines or that empty space that would make the shtar pasul. Now, we had Chizkiah's statement that says that the Shnei Shitim that we're speaking about are Biktav Yedei Edim. And now we had two statements after that. Rabbi Yisrael ben Elazar, who says that it has to be enough, lech lecha zel gabi zel, which was two lines and four spaces. And then your B'chir B'Ami is saying that it only has to be a lamed and a chaf above and below. That means that you have to have two lines with three spaces. How their positions relate to Chizkiah's original statement is questionable. The Rishbam writes, lo ate lefluge al Chizkiah. They're not arguing on Chizkiah. They're just defining what Chizkiah said. What does it mean, B'ktav Yedei Ha'edim? What does it mean in the handwriting of the Edim? This is the amount of space you're going to need in order to have it b'ktav yidei ayedim. There are others that suggest that it's not that way, but rather the situation here is talking about b'ktav yidei sofer. And not necessarily that they argue on Chizkiyah, but rather they're saying that this is the equivalent. If you say shnei shitin, two lines with space between them, so that's k'tav yedei din. If you use k'tav yedei sofer, then if you leave for the sofer two lines with four spaces there, one above, one below, and two in between, then for someone who is not a sofer, that'll be sufficient to write two lines. So that's another possibility, is that Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar is not speaking b'ktav yedei edim, but rather b'ktav yedei sofer, but he's saying that if you leave this type of space for a sofer, then in a k'tav yedei edim, it will fit into that space, because you're leaving extra space, you are being very cautious in the amount of space that the sofer is leaving, and that will be sufficient for a regular person to write in there. And you can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom that he says, behold, v'ikah harvacha kulei hai. Since you have that much space, Rabbeinu Gershom takes that in-between position, which is that Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar is speaking about k'tav yedei sofer. But you use that to measure out what k'tav yedei edim could do. Wait, what a normal person could write in that space. So you're leaving a sofer a generous amount of space. That means for a regular person writing, that's a good amount of space to work with. And obviously there's a third possibility, which is he's arguing on the statement before, where Chizkiyah says it's k'tav yedei edim, and over here we're speaking about k'tav yedei sofer, and they're arguing. The fact that the Rishbam has to point out that he's not arguing tells you that there are people who think that he is arguing. Again, the Rishbam thinks it's just a continuation of Chizkiyah, and this is all k'tav yedei edim. Others think it's k'tav yedei sofer, and he's arguing. And then we have the in-between position, which the Rabbeinu Gershom champions over here, which is, yes, it's k'tav yedei sofer, but through that you'll know or be able to write k'tav yedei edim. It's a generous amount for sofer, which will be the right amount for k'tav yedei edim. So now, Amar Rav, lo shanu ela ben edim l'ch'tav. The violation or the restriction against leaving empty space is only between the end of the shtar and the signature of the edim. Aval bein edim lasharta, if it is between the signature of the edim and the validation of Beit Din, afilu tuva nami kasher, even more space than that is fine. So a general structure of a document is, you have a shtar that is written, then you have the edim that are signed on the shtar. Then you go to Beit Din to get a henpek, which is a validation of Beit Din, or what the Gemara calls here an asharta Beit Din, which is the validation of the Beit Din. Remember that the validation of Beit Din does not speak to the content of the document itself. All the validation of Beit Din does is check that the edim that are signed here, we know their signature, we have someone who testifies about their signature, it's a validation that the edim that are signed here are real edim, and that's it. We know that these signatures are valid signatures and valid people that signed on the document. The equivalent of notary public, which does not, again, speak to the content of the shtar itself. But here you have now, in terms of the document itself, you have the content of the document, you have the signatures of the edim, and then below the signature of the edim, you have the validation of Beit Din. What Rav says is that what we've been speaking about here, about not leaving space, that's all between the content of the shtar and the edim. Between the edim and the validation of Beit Din, you can leave as much space as you want. That's what it seems that Rav is saying. The Gemara is going to say, Maishna ben edim lechtav. What are you worried about when you leave space between the edim and the content, the body of the shtar? Dilma mizayif vikotov madabai. We are worried about the fact that he will then forge a document in there and write whatever he wants. V'chatime sade. And the edim already signed there. So either he could add on to the existing shtar and put in extra information. That's one possibility. Or he could simply slice off the shtar on the top and write whatever he wants in those two lines. And then again, he has ready-made edim that are signed. Over here, he not only has ready-made edim, he's ready-made edim and a validation of Beit Din, so he can write whatever he wants there. So that's what we're worried about. Ben edim lasharta, nami mizayif fikotav madabai, v'chatim esade. You could do the same thing or simulate the same effect between the signature of the edim and the validation of Beit Din. So once again here, what he could do is, as opposed to the top of the document, where if he sliced off the top of the document and then he puts a new document in there, he writes in the empty space whatever he wants, then the edim are signed to whatever it is, and now he has a shtar with edim signed on it. Another way that he could do this is he could slice off the top of the document and the signature of the edim and just leave the validation of Beit Din. But now you said there's an empty space between the signature of the edim and the validation of Beit Din. So now if he slices off both the shtar and the edim, he has an empty space above a validation of Beit Din. So what he'll do is he'll forge some document, some shtar in there, forge signatures, and then he'll have a document with signatures that shows a validation of Beit Din. So nobody's going to check on the signatures anymore because Beit Din already validated the signatures. There weren't these signatures, but he's using the validation of Beit Din then to write whatever he wants above it. Rav is saying that if you leave space between the edim that are signed on the document and the asharta, that's not a problem. The Gemara says, why is it not a problem? He could then write the document on one line, sign the edim on the next line, and then the asharta Beit Din is right below that. You don't learn from the Shita Achrona. That's only when it's a Shita Achrona. If it's a one-line document, then you can't say we don't learn from the Shita Achrona. There's also another possibility, which is he writes the document on the line and has the edim signed at the end of the line. So he forces the edim at the end of the line. He still has the space, and then the asharta Beit Din. But he could use that empty space again to his advantage. So what they're asking is, why does Rav differentiate between leaving space between the body of the shtar and the edim versus leaving space between the edim and the asharta Beit Din, the validation of Beit Din? So the Gemara answer is no problem, de mitayit le, that he inks it out. The word actually is used in modern Hebrew, tiyuta, is a scrap paper or something that was print on it that was a mistake. It's a draft or something that has mistakes in it. So similarly over here, tiyuta is that they're going to put ink into that space. So between the signature of the edim and the validation of Beit Din, if there's empty space there, they're going to ink it out. The way that the Rashbam writes is that they're going to actually splotch the whole area with ink, and therefore it's not going to be usable anymore because there's ink on it, and the only way to use it now is to erase that area. The Rabbeinu Tam over here suggests that that's not the case, because if you splotch the whole area out, then you could erase it, and then write something on the erased area without any problem, because the validation will be on the part of the document that wasn't erased, but above you'll have everything, both the body of the document and the signatures on the erased part, so it looks like that's what was written over there. And again, that was very common in their day. They reused documents many times. You erase them and then reuse them because the cloth, first of all, is thick, and so you can erase by taking off the top layer, and then you're able to write again. Also, it was expensive. It was not as simple as today where you just buy paper and throw it out. They reuse things, and we find a lot of evidence of that in the Cairo Geniza. When they found in the Cairo Geniza, when they found documents, they found that documents were written on top of older items or other documents. So some of the researchers in the Cairo Geniza spent their time reconstructing what was on the second layer, the layer below what was written on the document. Since the documents were erased and then written over, they never erased them so well. In their day, they didn't have the ability to erase in such a manner that it was completely invisible. So the underlying document, you could still see the etchings or parts of it. So some researchers went ahead and reconstructed not only what's written on the documents, but what was written beforehand, before they had erased it and put it on. So that's visible. So that's what the Baalei Tosafot say over here, that if you splotch it with ink across the whole thing, then you'll get an even erasure. So he says what you have to do is sprinkle it with dots or make lines across. You have to make some sort of pattern that leaves ink on that area, but leaves empty space as well. Because then if you erase it, it'll be obvious that there was not just ink across and complete erasure, but there was some sort of pattern that existed there that was being erased. Very hard to erase it, and it will be obvious that you erased it. And that's what he writes here. Vomer Pirsh Rabbeinu Tam b'nikudot. You have to use some sort of dots. Oshurot, or lines. Shinikar b'chalak. So that you can see on the space that is not inked out, that that space was flat. Ma'at nikar shalom machak niikara. Because you'll see that some is erased and some is not erased in that situation. If, like the Rashbam, you splash the whole thing with ink, then if you just erase the whole thing, so then to solve his problem, what he'll do is he'll have the part that's inked out, which is the space between the edim and the asharta. So what he'll do is he'll go make a splash of ink on the whole shtar. He'll dump ink across the whole shtar, and even in the space where edim, v'chtov shtar begilyon. And then he'll write a shtar on the margins, shomala v'zayif edim, and then he'll forge the edim, or if he splashes the whole thing with ink, he'll be able to erase it in an even manner, and all the document will look the same. So what he wants to do to avoid that is to say that they sprinkled ink on there, or they wrote lines of ink so that the erasure would be hard to not detect, because there's a difference between the inked areas and non-inked areas. Plus, if you want to simulate that above to erase what's above, it'd be very hard to do that because you have writing, and now you're putting lines or dots on it, it'll be obvious that you erased. So he wants to make it that it's not replicable, the type of inking that you're doing over here. For the Rashbam, when you hear Malach Lecho B'dayo, as the Rashbam says, then you can simulate that. Just do the same thing above on the shtar or on the other areas and erase it, and it'll all look uniform. So what the Rabbeinu Tam suggests is you do it in a pattern in a way that will not leave a uniform erasure, both because the area that you're erasing has blank and inked spaces, as well as if you try to do that up top, you will have the writing or the letters that were there plus the pattern, and it'll be obvious that somebody did something here or there was an erasure that took place over here. So that's how they would deal with it. So the Gemara says, Ihochi, if that's the solution, b'neidim l'shtar, nami mitayedle. Why don't you do the same thing with regards to the space between the body of the shtar and the edim? If you do the same tiyuta, then you'd solve your problem. If you can do that to solve the spacing problem between the edim and the henpek or the asharta of the beitin, you can do the same thing between the body of the shtar and the edim. It says, Amre, sade atiyuta hu dechatime. Sade, the edim think they are signing on the blotching, or we will think that the edim signed on the tiyuta. Bein edim nesharta nami amre beidina atiyuta hu dechatime. Let's say that the beitin also signed on the tiyuta. Beidina atiyuta lo chatime. Beitin doesn't sign on tiyuta on these blotches or these ink markings. So what the Gemara says is, if this is a solution for the space between the Edim and the Asharta Beitin, let's use that same solution for the space between the body of the Shtar and the Edim. The answer is that when we see the Edim sign below that marking, that splotch of ink, or that sprinkling of ink, we start to worry that there was something essential in the document that was there, and the guy on purpose poured ink over it to erase that what was there to make invisible something that was important in the document over there. Or it's going to look like this document was problematic, and then they poured ink on it originally. So what we think is that the signature of the edim is signing on the fact that whatever this blotch of ink is was done intentionally. It wasn't that they were signing on the document itself. They're signing on the fact that this ink didn't change the meaning of the document above. So now we have a problem, because now we don't have any edim signed on the shtar, either because the edim themselves think they're signing on this blotch, or when we see the document afterwards, we're uncertain as to whether the edim signed on the blotch of ink or the pattern of ink versus signing on the document above. And so we don't want to use the tiyuta there. I'd say the same thing by beitin. When you have that blotch of ink or you have that sprinkling of ink between the signing of the edim and the asharta of the beitin, let's say that beitin is signing on the fact that there's a blotch of ink there. Where it says, Beitin doesn't sign on blotches of ink. You don't need a Beitin to do that. The Beitin there is simply to validate the shtar, or to really validate the signatures of the edim. So it doesn't matter if you have a blotch of ink there, if you have dots there. They're not dealing with that. That's not the content of the asharta of Beitin. The content of the asharta of Beitin says we see signatures, and we validated the signatures. So of course it's obvious that that's what they did, or that the ink in between is meaningless. But by edim or signing, it is valid to have them sign on the inked area, not just on the shtar. You have that today. Whenever there's a change in the document, you have somebody initial those changes. If you have spacing that's left and you want to make sure that nothing gets filled in, you have people sign or you cross it out, you put lines through it. But you want to make sure that when that's the case, those lines or those areas that are covered up are not hiding something that's there, or they weren't a problem in the shtar, and so you have edim sign below that. And when they sign below that, then they're maybe just signing on that area, not on the shtar as a whole. So for that reason, Rav differentiates between spacing that's left between the body of the shtar and the edim, where we say it's pasul, versus a case where there's gapping between the signatures of the edim and the asharta of the beit din. Now he agrees if it's blank space, that that's no good. It has to be space that is inked in, so nobody can do this forgery where they slice off the top and write some sort of document that has a validation of beit din on it. Leichush, Dilma gayez leleila, umachik le de tiyuta. So here this guy, what is he going to do now? He's going to slice off the top of the shtar. Then he will erase the area of the tiyuta of this inking. V'kotav madubai. And then he'll write whatever he wants over there. Umachtin sade. And then he'll have edim sign, whether that's real edim or he himself will forge the signature of edim. Va'amarav, shtar abahu ve'idav ala machak, kasher. And we have a statement from Rav, which we'll investigate in tomorrow's daf, which is that if you have a document that is written on an erasure, meaning that's written on an erased document, plus the edim are signed on the erased document, kasher, then it's fine. Because our fear, obviously, is that if you have a edim signed on an area that wasn't erased, and a shtar that's written on the place that erased, our fear is that he erased the original document, rewrote whatever he wants, and the edim now are signed on that document. The difference in the klaf, one part being erased and the other part not, would tip us off to the fact that there is a problem. But if the edim are signed on the same type of klaf, whether it's new klaf or whether it's erased klaf, as long as they're signed on the same klaf as the contract, there's nothing to worry about. Because yes, if he erased it, then the erasure was also where the part where the edim were. So whatever was there before was erased, and the edim signed on the new document on top of that erasure. And the truth is that if you erased something again, it's noticeable. I mean that if you erase twice versus once, you will be able to tell the difference. So if you erase the document, and then you write a new contract with the edim signed on it, and then you go, okay, fine, you erase the top again, and then you write a new shtar, and then you're both written on erased klaf. The truth is you'll be able to notice that. The erasure of the above was done twice, and the erasure of the edim was only done once. You'll either notice it from the thickness of the klaf, because the way that they erased actually took off the klaf, or you'll see it from the fact that the letters are still visible. There's still some underlying visibility to that which was there before. And you'll see that there were two things written there versus by the part of the edim, there was only one thing that was written there before. So you'll be able to note the difference. But Rav says, when you have a document that's erased, and both the contract and the edim are signed on that same erased paper, that is totally fine, or that erased klaf is totally fine, because there's nothing to be chosesh for there. They wrote an unerased klaf. That's what they use. They reused the klaf in their day, and that's fine. So now what the guy's going to do is he's going to take the document that he has here. He has a shtar, edim signed, chiyuta, and then an asharta de beit din. He has a validation of beit din. So what he'll do is he'll chop off the shtar and the edim from the top, get rid of them completely. Then he will erase the area that we inked out. In that erased area that was inked out, he'll write a new shtar, have the edim sign on it. According to Rav, it's a completely valid shtar. Both the edim and the body of the shtar are now written on the same type of klaf, which is erased klaf. That'll work. And right below that, you'll have the validation of beit din. So now the truth is the validation of beit din will be on non-erased area, and this will be on erased area. But we don't have such a qualification. There's no necessity to have the validation of beit din on the same klaf as the contract is written on. The truth is, the validation of beit din can be written on a separate piece of paper completely. It does not need to be on this contract itself. So the fact that it is there on a different type of klaf, meaning that a non-erased klaf should not be a deficit in the document, because again, they don't have to necessarily write it on the document itself. It could be a separate document that is the validation of beit din. So in that way, you're going to have a problem now, which is Rav's solution over here as to why it's not a problem between the edim and the validation of beit din will lead to a possibility of forgeries, because Rav says that if you have a document on which there's erasure, but as long as the contract body and the edim are signed on the same type of klaf, that's fine. So Gemara says, Anicha the Rav Kano, that works well according to Rav Kano, Demat Yila Mishmei de Shmuel Shapir. He says that statement of when you write something, a contract, plus the edim are signed on the same type of cloth or paper, meaning that it's either completely new or it's erased. If that's the case, it's kasher. If that's in the name of Shmuel, then it's not a stira to Rav. Our problem now is we have two statements of Rav that seemingly are contradictory. We have Rav saying that you have no problem leaving space between the edim and the validation of beit din if you use tiyuta. We have Rav saying that if you have an erased document, you can have a contract and edim on that erased document. So then in that way, you can create a forgery. So now, if you separate the two statements and say Rav made the statement that you're allowed to leave space between the edim and the asharta, and Shmuel is the one who says that you can write a document on an erased klaf as long as the edim are signed on that same erased klaf, then there's no stira. Rav doesn't have to hold of Shmuel's din. And then you could say that in the case where he erased it, Rav thinks it's pasul. And if it's pasul, then you wouldn't have a problem here of forgeries on such a validation of beit din. But Ela the Rav Tavyume, according to Rav Tavyume, the Matni Lamishmei the Rav, who says that this memra was in the name of Rav, Ma'ika the Meimar. Now you have a stira in the positions of Rav. And the truth is that this question could exist on any contract that has a contract, a dim stein, and then an asharta baitin on the bottom. You could be suspicious of the fact that he'll erase everything on top and then put in whatever he wants in the area above the asharta de baitin. So the Rashbam says, Eino chanami. V'chav kasho b'chol ashtarot sheesh b'hu enpek. You could ask this question about any scenario in which there's an asharta de baitin at the bottom. The answer that we're going to give will be equally good for this situation that we're speaking about, as well as for other cases of shtarot. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot say, Im ken kol shtar mikuyam yimchakenu, ve'yesh lomar. Ta'alo kashe kulehai. That's not such a big question. The kevin she'akatu mitchila lo yuchal lemachako, that if it was written before on the upper part of the shtar, and you go to erase it, that type of erasure leaves an imprint of the original shtar. But if you erase blotches of ink, or ink that's there, you won't see that so clearly. He'll erase it completely, and then be able to write whatever he wants. So over here, Tosafot at least suggests that maybe there's a difference between the erasure of regular writing and the erasure of the tiyuta, and that's why the Gemara's question is focused on the tiyuta. In tomorrow's daf, then the Baalei Tosafot acknowledge that the Gemara will say there is no difference between tiyuta and ktav, and no matter which way you erase it, it will be visible or noticeable, and therefore the Rashbam's point is well taken, which is that this question could have been equally valid on any shtar that has an asharta at the bottom. It says, Kasavar, Kohlikai Gavno, Emikaiminoto Minasharta Shibo. Anything that looks like this, or set up in this way, you would not validate it through the validation of Beitin, Elamina Edim Shibo, but rather through the Edim that are found in it. Which is that if you have the Ikar Ashtar and the Edim found in an area that's erased, and you have the Asharta Beitin written on an area that was not erased, in that case, we will not rely on the asharta, the validation of Beitin, and we will go to a new validation, and we'll use the edim above to validate it. So Rav is indicating such a shtar would not be acceptable, and so therefore you're not going to run into these possibilities of forgeries. Because in that situation, we won't trust the validation of Beitin. So now you don't have to worry now. If you have this tiyuta that's above the validation of Beitin, we're not going to worry about him slicing off the top of the shtar, the edim, then erasing the tiyuta and then writing a new shtar there, because we see something like that, we're going to say, question mark, is this really a validation of that shtar? And therefore we don't worry about it. I mean, a shtar that's written on an erased cloth, with the edim sign on that erased cloth, that'll be a good shtar, a valid shtar. You'll just have to revalidate it. If there's a validation there, you have to revalidate it in Beit Din, unless the validation is also on the same erased cloth. Or, if it's not on that, or you don't have a validation of Beit Din, it'll be a fine shtar. You just have to get it validated again, or you have to validate through the signatures above. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Lo Shanu El Bene Edim Lechtav. Rabbi Yochanan says that we not only say that between the Edim and the Ktav, being the body of the shtar, and the Edim, you can hear out the space, Lo Bene Edim Lasharta Filu Shita Achat Pasul. Not only is it that we say that between the Edim and the validation of Beit Din that it is Pasul, just like above, we're actually more Machmir over there than we are above. That between the Shtar and the Edim, we said that Shita Achat is not problematic. Shtei Shitot, two lines, is problematic. But between the signature of the Edim and the Asharta Beit Din, the validation of Beit Din, even one line would be problematic. And so that's what Rabbi Yochanan says over here. Lo shano ben eidim lechtav, aba ben eidim lasharta, afilu shita achat pasul. Even one line is invalid. And you can see over here that Rashbam writes, va'af agav demitayet. Even if you splotch it with ink in that space, it won't help you. So the Rashbam clearly views Rabbi Yochanan is arguing on Rav. Arguing full throttle on Rav, which means that Rav, who says that you can solve the problem of putting tiyuta there, Rabbi Yochanan says, first of all, tiyuta doesn't work. And number two is, even if there is one space, and not two spaces, two lines, one line and not two lines, it's problematic. And so he sees this as being a full-fledged machloket. And the machloket has to do with the way the Rashbam writes it, b'nir b'einai, tamo shel davar, the reason being, hu ve'eda b'shita achat kasher, which we're going to see in 1 second. Yochanan believes that you can write a document in which the entire contract is on one line, and the Edim sign at the end of that line. To lo polig rabbanim ben shtar gadol to shtar katan. Because the Rabbanan made no distinction between a big shtar and a small shtar. Meaning you have a shtar that is one line long, and you have a shtar that's 10 lines long. But we make no distinction here, because if you leave a space one line, that's enough space to write a shtar in that space. If you allow this individual to have a space between the Avim and the validation of Beit Din, now you're going to run into a problem, which is he's going to slice off the top, and then he's going to have one line there, and that one line will be a valid shtar. He'll write, Ani ploni chayav lo maneh, I so-and-so am chayav maneh to the holder of the shtar, and then there'll be two Avim signed right across the line there. And then right below that, there'll be a validation of Beit Din. It's a great setup for him. But the way the Rishbam says is it's even with the Tiyuta, even if you mark it up over there, we're still afraid of it because you'll erase it. And in that one line, you'll write a shtar that is a valid shtar. So that means that Rabbi Yochanan really completely argues on Rav's position. On the other hand, if you look at the Balei Tosafot, it's actually the end of the Tosafot from the previous Amud. If you look down, three lines down in that Tosafot. V'yesh lomar, the Savir of Yochanan mitayit le pasul, mishom de beidina atiyuta chatmei. Tosfot over here brings one possibility, which is that Rabbi Yochanan argues fundamentally on Rav. Rav said there's a distinction between the signatures of the Edim and the signatures of Beit Din. The signature of the Edim could be on the inking of the area, not just on the contract itself. And that's what we worry about. But by Beit Din doesn't come to sign on anything. It's just validating signatures. So don't worry about them signing on the Tiyuta. Rabbi Yochanan maybe argues on that and says that we do think Beit Din signs on a Tiyuta. So adding in the Tiyuta is not going to be of any good or of any help over here, because then you might have the Beit Din signing on the Tiyuta. So that may be one way to explain the machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, which is that Rabbi Yochanan believes that Beit Din, just like the Edim, can sign on a Tiyuta, and that would cause the problem, therefore the Tiyuta is not helpful. That's the way one possibility. Inami, Igal HaMeimar Zalo Plige. Maybe they don't argue. El Rav Mairi B'Tiyuta, Rabbi Yochanan Mairi B'Lo Tiyuta. Maybe they don't argue. Rav is speaking in a case where there was a Tiyuta over there. Rabbi Yochanan is speaking in a case where there was no Tiyuta over there. So they're speaking about two different cases. So their halacha is in concert because they're talking about two different situations. Rabbi Yochanan would agree if he had Tiyuta there, it would be fine. And Rav would agree if you don't have a Tiyuta there, it would be problematic. Just means that they're speaking about different cases. Inami. Now there's a third possibility about what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Rav disagree about. Shita achat ben edim lasharta l'rav kasher. Choki gai gav na'im ekaimin oto miasharta elem edim shibo. Or the other possibility is that when you have one line between the edim and the validation of the shtar, that's what they argue about. Ein ochanami, if you had tiyuta there, everybody would agree it's fine. If you didn't have tiyuta there, it would be problematic. But there's still a difference between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav still says you need two lines there for it to be problematic, and Rabbi Yochanan says you only need one line there to be problematic. That is because Rabbi Yochanan, the Shita Tov, believes you can have a shtar with one line, and then Edim signed at the end of the line, and the validation of Beit Din would reference that. Rav will say in that case, that's not true. Rav will say that either because there's an erasure there, and it's written on the erasure, the validation of Beit Din will not be used to validate. Here you have to get a second validation. Or even if there's no erasure there, if you have a contract that is written on one line with Edim signed at the end, we will not trust the validation of Beit Din below it. We'll ask for a second validation of Beit Din. So that might be the machloka between them. So it makes a difference, because generally the Klali HaPsaka, Rabbi Yochanan, Alocha Ke Rabbi Yochanan. So how Rabbi Yochanan references or relates to Rav is important over here, because Alocha is going to be like Rabbi Yochanan. So if you say that Rabbi Yochanan fundamentally agrees with Rav, then Alocha is like Rav in this situation. If you think that Rabbi Yochanan completely disagrees with Rav, then Allah will be Rabbi Yochanan as opposed to Rav, or you have the possibilities in the Balei Tosafot who narrows the machloket to smaller issues here. And again, that will mean that in general Allah is like Rav, but in these small issues that we would lean towards Rabbi Yochanan. But it's clear that the Rishbam believes that it's a full-fledged machloket between them, and Tosafot brings that possibility as well, but then also entertains the possibility of either they don't disagree at all, or that there's smaller nuances in their disagreement. So now the Gemara says, "Maishna ben edim l'asharta." What is the problem according to Rabbi Yochanan between the edim and the asharta? Dilma gayizli ilai b'katav huveida b'shita achat. What are you worried about over here? That he's going to slice off the top, and then in that blank space he's going to write a whole shtar and have the edim sign at the end of the line. Because savar shtar abah huveida b'shita achat kasher. And Rabbi Yochanan is of the position that if you have a shtar that is one line long, with the edim signed at the end of the line, that is a fully valid shtar. Yochi, if that's the case, ben edim nektav nami. Why don't you say the same thing could exist between the body of the shtar and the edim? If between the body of the shtar and the edim they leave one line, which until now we thought was kasher, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it should be problematic. Dilma gaizle le yilai, because the madabai, bechatim esaden, you have edim signed below it. He'll slice off the top, which is the body of the shtar, he'll be left with one blank line and then the signature of edim. And that one blank line, he'll write a new shtar, and then you'll have the edim signed immediately below that. Kasavar shtar abahu b'shita achat, veda b'shita acheret pasul. He says that is not a kosher shtar. If you have a shtar that is one line long, and then you have a edim signed below it, that is a shtar that is suspect. We will not accept that. If you have a one-line shtar with a edim signed at the end of the line, that's an acceptable shtar. But if you have a shtar that's one line long, and then right below it the edim are signed, that already raises suspicions about the fact that he added this line in afterwards, and we will not trust such a shtar. Gemara says, "V'leichush dilma katav hu ve'eda b'shidachat." So what we'll do here is have him write in one line the document, the shtar. At the end of that, he will have edim that are signed. Again, originally he had a document, a shtar, with one blank space, and then edim signed below. What he'll do is he'll slice off the top, then he will write in that one empty line, he will write a shtar, have edim signed at the end, plus we have the edim that are signed below it, and then the shtar to the validation of edim will sit below it. Why don't we worry about such a forgery or such a case? Because then he'll have edim at the end of the line, which will make it into a kosher shtar. And what will he say about the edim that are below, which are suspect? Why are the edim below? He'll say this, V'amar ana the rabot be'edim hu da'avde. I wanted to have more edim signed on it. I wanted to increase the awareness or publicity of this shtar. So not only do I have two edim signed on it, I have four edim signed on it. Two of them signed at the end of the line, of the first line of the contract, and the other two signed below. So again, he's now accomplished a forgery, but in a way that makes it kasher. You have one line shtar. One line shtar, we said, has to be signed at the end in order for it to be valid. He did that. Ah, what about the edim that are sitting below it? I added on extra edim. They couldn't fit at the end of the line, so I added in two more edim below it. And then I have the validation of Beit Din. So now I have a validated contract that looks great. Why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan worry about that scenario? That's because when we have such a scenario or such a situation, we validate it based on the edim at the end of the line, not on the edim that are below. So either if there is an asharta Beit Din, we won't accept such a devalidation and we will revalidate it based on the edim at the end of the line. Or if there is no validation of Beit Din over here and you want to validate it, we won't validate it based on the signatures below. We know the signatures below are good signatures. They were signed on a different shtar beforehand and they were valid signatures. So we know if we go to Beit Din will validate these signatures and that's what he wants. He wants a validation of the lower signatures because that will then validate his contract above. So what we say is in that scenario, when he says I added an edim and they're signed below, we will not validate the contract based on the edim below, we will validate it based on the edim at the end of the line. And so there, if he forged the document and those edim, we'll figure out that it's a forgery now. If he has really edim signed on it, then maybe it is a valid contract because the edim are only signing. If they're a corrupt edim, again, then it doesn't matter anyway. You can have any contract written with corrupt edim and lying about it. So that's not unique to this scenario. For that reason, Rabbi Yochanan allows you to have one line of empty space between the shtar and the edim that are signed, because in that way you will not be able to create a shtar that is false. Because if you create a shtar that is false and an edim signed below it, we won't accept it if it's a one-line shtar. If it's a one-line shtar with edim signed next to it and you have edim signed below, we will have to validate it based on the edim on the line of the shtar, not on the edim below, so we'll catch it that way. And so therefore, one line is not problematic. Two lines, of course, two empty spaces, that will be problematic. Between the signature of the edim and the validation of Beit Din, there even one line will be problematic, because there you can create a shtar that has one line shtar with the edim signed at the end that will have a validation of Beit Din below it, and have a pre-validated shtar. For that reason, one line will be problematic in that case. So that's the shita of Yochanan, as opposed to that of Rav. He says, number one, you cannot leave one empty line between the edim and the validation of Beit Din. And then according to the different Rishonim, he might even be arguing if you have a tiyuta, even if you have the ink that area there, it would not work. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan worries about there being one line of space between the edim and the shtar, whereas Rav does not worry about that because he says tiyuta can solve that problem. Whether Rav agrees to Rabbi Yochanan or not will depend on what we said before as to whether Rabbi Yochanan and Rav are arguing fundamentally or whether there's some nuanced differences between them. Over here, the Balei Tosafot speak about signatures on documents, and they say, based on what we see now from this position of Rabbi Yochanan, you will come to the following conclusion, which is, Hashta Atina Lahochi, since we've now concluded, the Paslina Notan Shtarot, Sheyechol Zaytzeinu, that if you can forge or create a forgery out of a document, the document is automatically pasul. So to your question, even if we have empty space that's left there, and we come to Beit Din and the empty space is still there, and the Edim are there, nevertheless the Shtar is pasul, because inherently the Shtar allows for forgeries. And we won't allow Shtarot to be used when they can create forgeries. Imkain, Tzarich Lizeir Botan Shtarot Ktubot, we have a Shtar Ktuba, Sheyesh Lahem Gilyon, if they have a margin, shelo yichatmu edim ze etzel ze, that the edim should not sign one next to the other. Shechol evad de ziyuf, because that can come to a forgery. You think about it, you have a shtar or a ktubah, and at the bottom of the shtar or the ktubah, the edim, instead of signing one on top of the other, they sign one next to each other on a horizontal line. What's your fear now? They have now two signatures in a row, and now you have a document above it, and then you have a margin around the document, an empty space of margin. What the guy's going to do is slice off the top document, then use the margin on the right side to write a small shtar between that and the two edim that are signed there. Now he's going to have a valid contract. You have it writing there, and two edim signed right afterwards on it, and they'll create a valid document. So the Balei Tosafot say that, you can't have a document like that, because that is v'yavo lidei ziyuf. That can end up with a forgery. You can write along that margin whatever he wants and have the edim in line with that. And he'll cut off the old shtar and he'll just have that left. That's what Rabbi Yochanan leaves us. Now if you then, the Balei Tosafot suggests that you do it one on top of the other, you have edim one on top of the other, he says there's still a risk there too. Because what you could do is, you could have a person come in, slice off the shtar on top, on the right margin, right, Ani, Ploni, Chayav Maneh. I am so-and-so Chayav Maneh, and it has the individual aid signature right after that. So this is basically the equivalent of, in your own handwriting, saying that you are Chayav, a amount of money. It's like a bearer bond. Whoever holds this can come make a claim against that aid that he owes money. And it has the Ktav Yad, it has the writing of the debtor, because the debtor's signature is right afterwards. So it's the equivalent of you bringing in a document that says, I owe so-and-so, I owe $1,000 shekel, I owe $1,000. Right after that, you sign it. So there's like a bearer bond where someone can hand it in and say you're chayav. So there's a risk there, even when they sign one on top of the other, of that problem. The Balei Tosafot say there, we don't worry about it, that's the aid's problem. If an aid signs in a way where it could be forged and he could lose out, that's his mistake. And so therefore, he needs to either put a scribble in front of the line that's there. It's equivalent of like writing a check. When you write a check, if you just write the number and you leave blank spaces afterwards, you're opening yourself up to risk. So you need to write a line across. You need to do something that prevents someone from doing that. So the same thing over here. If you're going to sign a document, you have to make sure your signature is not in a place that it can be utilized or used against you. In that case, we don't worry about it because it's not a forged document that he's going to create. He can only obligate that aid himself. And that's the aid's problem, not our problem. When you write alongside the signatures, all the signatures have to be on the same line. And therefore, if they sign one next to the other, you have that risk that he'll write on the margin and you have a good contract. If they're one above the other, we will not accept such a contract, as Rabbi Yochanan said, because there it looks more obvious there could have been something that was done to cheat in that case, and therefore we won't accept such a document. The Balei Tosafot then go on, inami, to say that maybe in that case we will not be posel the shtar, or iktubah, where they're signed one next to the other, even when there's a margin around it. Because what we worry about, or we as parties worry about, is forgeries within the normal spectrum of what's written in the document. We don't worry about the margins. We're not going to start thinking about margins and what he can do to falsify something in the margin. What we worry about is in the area that is the shtar, or the main body of the shtar, if he can falsify or do a forgery in there, that's what we worry about. And therefore, the only time we will worry about it is that they deem sign not right justified on the document, but they sign in the middle of the document or towards the left side of the document. In that case, it will be a false document and we won't allow it. He says, as far as margins are concerned, we're not going to concern ourselves. Again, this is two positions within the Balei Tosafot, whether we worry about the margin or don't worry about the margin. But if you assume we don't worry about the margin, for both of them we do worry about a case where Edim sign one next to the other, either starting in the middle of the document or towards the left side or towards the end of the document. Because in that case, again, he can come slice off the top, and then he can write the shtar in that empty space before the signature of the Edim. So in that case, the shtar will be invalid because there's a chance of forgery in the shtar, and we won't allow that shtar to be used. And therefore, Edim have to be careful when they sign on documents that they sign to the right justified side, and they sign one on top of the other. And that way, you prevent the document from being a forgery or being open to forgery, and then the document will be kasher. And that's what the Bali Tosafot would say as a bottom line, that Rabbeinu Tam, Pasak, Kamosha Perashti Tchila, he passed him like I said above, She'edim Tzrichim Lachtom, O Aresha de Megilta, Afilu Zeh Zalzeh, they can sign one next to the other, as long as they do it on the right margin, all the way to the right side. O Be'emsa Shita, or if they do it in the middle, Cholakein Katav She'achtemu Zeh Tachat Zeh, they have to sign one above the other. For that reason, he comes to the conclusion that that's the way to do it. If you're going to sign in the middle of the document, then you have to sign one on top of the other. If you're going to sign one next to each other, it has to be at the start of the row of the document, and maybe even all the way to the edge of the margin, so nobody can put anything in there. When you're one on top of the other, even if you have space to the right, you can't do anything with that space, because we already said that it's invalid. If you have a one-line document or a document, and the lady must sign one on top of the other, invalid. If they are in a row, then you could have a sheet achad contract, which is one contract with two signatures next to it. To prevent that, you need to sign all the way to the right side, so nothing can be written in front of it. And that's what the Bali Tosafot conclude from this position of Rabbi Yochanan over here. That's the way that these documents must be signed. If they're not signed this way, then you have a document that's open to forgery, and the document becomes invalid. Because any document that's open to alteration automatically becomes invalid. Obviously, we're speaking about in Hebrew, the Gemara deals with Greek instead of English, but the same thing, if you write from left to right, you'll have the same situation in which you'll need to be all the way over to the left side of the margin, or the left side of the document if you're going to sign one next to each other. Again, if they're signing one above another, then you have less of an issue, as long as you don't leave a space between the body of the shtar and the signatures. And we're going to stop here, two lines from the bottom of Kuf Samach Gimel Amud Bet, where the Gemara Gufa is going to go back to discuss that position of Rav that we mentioned before. When you have a document and the signatory is written on an erased cloth, that is fine.